Interpreting Upanishads, Differences and Correspondences. As pointed out earlier, the 13 Upanishads included in this volume, and some others of the same early period not covered here, are part of the Vedic literature, affiliated as they are to one or the other Vedic Samhitas. They were authored by scores of seers and teachers over more than six centuries and at different places in the vast territory of the Indian subcontinent. The necessity of retaining them in memory without committing them to writing for the sake of preserving them, as is true for the whole of the vast corpus of Vedic literature, also required that the compositions be made very brief and concise, by condensing the ideas in as few words as possible. Over the centuries, the memorized texts thus served only as shorthand devices to be followed by extended verbal expositions in order to understand the ideas and maintain the tradition of knowledge. Furthermore, the treatises grew mainly for the purpose of teaching pupils who came from various backgrounds with diverse experiences and who were in different states of readiness. This required the teachers constantly to adjust and innovate their approach, style of expression, and even the course of instruction to suit every individual case. Last but not least, the long interval between the times when these Upanishads were composed and when they came to be reinterpreted brought about many a semantic and substantive gap in the transmission of the Upanishadic tradition. All this means that the Upanishads are filled with various strands of ideas and utterances which seem sometimes inconsistent and contradictory, or even obscure and baffling. And what is more, they are susceptible to divergent interpretations. In this circumstance, the question inescapably arises whether the Upanishads, as a whole, truly present a single cohesive and coherent philosophical system, or whether they are merely an assortment of unrelated and divergent ideas. Much of Western, or at any rate modern, scholarship has taken a position which is, in different degrees, closer to the latter view. It has been pointed out that even where the Upanishads do present a distinct metaphysical standpoint, they are far from representing a formally complete philosophical system, that they are often marked by inconsistencies and irrelevancies, and even conflicting viewpoints, and that anyone looking for a sense of coherence and completeness in the Upanishads will soon be disappointed. If one were to ignore what we have said so far, treating the Upanishads as if they were a single, explicitly clear document produced at a single time, and furthermore, in opposition to the Upanishadic injunction, for example, Katha Upanishad, if one were to let logic aid judgment, then the above criticism might not be altogether unreasonable. However, the dominant ontological tradition in India has always maintained that all the Upanishadic texts are mutually consistent and that they do expound a complete, coherent truth about the ultimate reality, namely, that all is one, Brahman, and that there is identity of one, Brahman, and the self, Atman. This central doctrine of the Upanishads is the cornerstone of the Vedanta philosophy, which is also faithfully shared by two other celebrated works of the early period, the Bhagavad Gita and Brahma Sutras. Together, these three works are therefore labeled Prasthantrayi, the fountainhead of Vedanta, in departure from the earlier emphasis on ritualism that had influenced all thought and works. Notwithstanding an allegiance to this doctrine, however, there have grown many different schools of philosophy also in India, mainly those attributed to Gaud Apada, Shankar, Ramanuja, and Vallabha, which present varyingly different points of view. Differences between them are, however, mostly technical and epistemological. It is beyond the scope of a short introduction to dwell upon these differences of views and interpretations. Nor can it be assumed that such a discussion would render the Upanishads clearer and easier to follow. What we have tried here is to adhere mainly to the generally agreed core position of the Vedanta. We have highlighted the major elements of its ontological standpoint and avoided those aspects which are not only liable to undermine clarity, but are also the source of most of the controversies. In the last analysis, however, it needs to be said that a truer understanding of the Upanishads can only arise from one's own experience, rather than from views and comments offered by others, helpful as they often are for seeking direction and overcoming initial difficulties.